Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback writer.
This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. This is show number 145, and it is February 5th, 2024. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and co-host Terry Brown will be with us shortly. But for this broadcast, she's our guest author. So a brief intro to that show would be Terry Brown wrote Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, and we can't wait to talk to her about that, and I'm really looking forward to that. This would be her third book in her career now, so that's exciting news for Terry. And now more about us. Here's where you could find us out there. Find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriddell.net. That's thomasriddell.net. In the blog section and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge or find us easily on a Google search. Our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line and we'll get back to you. I've been doing book reviews over 11 years now, and besides those reviews being posted on my site, I also review for Goodreads and Read the Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike. And if you're a reader of books and are looking for a good book to read, go check them out. You won't be disappointed. And upcoming authors on the Writer's Lounge on February 19th, 2024, we're going to have on Michael Kennedy, who wrote Time Conjurer. This is a mix of time-traveling science fiction and historical fiction that takes us back to the Civil Rights era. It's an exciting adventure where one can dip a finger into a photograph and go back to a time where our loved ones are alive. So that's very exciting. It was a very exciting book for me to read, and it'll be a very interesting and exciting interview when we talk to Michael Kennedy about that. On March 4th, that's to be announced. I haven't got a book yet, but one will be coming shortly, and we will announce it on our Facebook page. And this is the next segment of our show where we introduce writers' topics. Normally, we have Terry on, and of course, Terry, we're going to give Terry a break from writers' topics tonight. And we'll be talking to her shortly in the guest author and intro and interview segment of the show. So while we're waiting for Terry to come on, I thought that I'd go back a little bit and play one of the segments that was of interest to quite a few people. I've gotten a little bit of email on it. And writers out there really want to know how to write their novels and use descriptive words better than maybe they're using now. So they really like to be able to describe a scene or describe a certain segment of the novel that they're writing or scene that they're writing. So that should be interesting. And the person we're going to be hearing from is Nalo Hopkinson and how to write descriptively. That'll be about 4 minutes and 30 seconds long. And then after that, we'll come back to Terry. But I also want to inform everybody, we have been away from the broadcast for quite a while. I came down with my second COVID, so that wasn't fun. And my voice went, and that was not fun either. It went both times, so I was sort of anticipating it the second time, and sure enough, that's what happened. So that's why we've been absent. We're not thinking about canceling. A couple of the authors that have been on before on our broadcast who regularly listen in were concerned that we were going to hang it up, and I'm not going to hang it up. I have no intention of doing anything like that. And also I want to remind everybody that soon I'm going to have a special announcement coming up regarding a book that I just had published. Well, it's actually in the process of being publishing, and shortly I hope we can get that out, and I will be announcing that on the show, and you'll be able to hear all about that, and maybe Terry and I can talk a little bit about the process of writing a little bit later in the show today too. So anyways, on with Nalo Hopkinson about descriptive writing, and then we'll be back to talk to Terry Brown.
I always believed in...
I was wondering...
We read fiction for many reasons. To be entertained, to find out who done it, to travel to strange new planets, to be scared, to laugh, to cry, to think, to feel... To be so absorbed that, for a while, we forget where we are. So, how about writing fiction? How do you suck your readers into your stories? With an exciting plot? Maybe. Fascinating characters? Probably. Beautiful language? Perhaps. Billy's legs are noodles. The ends of her hair are poison needles. Her tongue is a bristly sponge, and her eyes are bags of bleach. Did that description almost make you feel as queasy as Billy? We grasp that Billy's legs aren't actually noodles. To Billy, they feel as limp as cooked noodles. It's an implied comparison, a metaphor. So why not simply write it like this? Billy feels nauseated and weak. Chances are, the second description wasn't as vivid to you as the first. The point of fiction is to cast a spell. A momentary illusion that you are living in the world of the story. Fiction engages the senses, helps us create vivid mental simulacra of the experiences the characters are having. Stage and screen engage some of our senses directly. We see and hear the interactions of the characters and the setting. But with prose fiction, all you have is static symbols on a contrasting background. If you describe the story in matter-of-fact, non-tactile language, the spell risks being a weak one. Your reader may not get much beyond interpreting the squiggles. She will understand what Billy feels like, but she won't feel what Billy feels. She'll be reading, not immersed in the world of the story, discovering the truths of Billy's life at the same time that Billy herself does. Fiction plays with our senses, taste, smell, touch, hearing, sight, and the sense of motion. It also plays with our ability to abstract and make complex associations. look at the following sentence. The world was ghost quiet, except for the crack of sails and the burbling of water against hull. The words quiet, crack, and burbling engage the sense of hearing. Notice that Bakel doesn't use the generic word sound. Each word he chooses evokes a particular quality of sound. Then, like an artist laying on washes of color to give the sense of texture to a painting, he adds another layer, motion, the crack of sails, and touch, the burbling of water against hull. Finally, he gives us an abstract connection by linking the word quiet with the word ghost, not quiet as a ghost, which would put a distancing layer of simile between the reader and the experience. Instead, Bakel creates the metaphor ghost quiet for an implied rather than overt comparison. Writers are always told to avoid cliches because there's very little engagement for the reader in an overused image such as red as a rose, but give them love began on a beach. It began that day when Jacob saw Annette in her stewed cherry dress. And their brains engage in the absorbing task of figuring out what a stewed cherry dress is like. Suddenly, they're on a beach about to fall in love. They're experiencing the story at both a visceral and a conceptual level, meeting the writer halfway in the imaginative play of creating a dynamic world of the senses. So when you write, use well-chosen words to engage sound, sight, taste, touch, smell, and movement. Then create unexpected connotations among your story elements and set your readers' brushfire imaginations alight.
And there you go. And once again, it was from Nalo Hopkinson. And I hope you enjoyed that on how to write descriptively. And now let's go on to our next segment with guest author intro and interview. And that would be with Terry M. Brown, who wrote Daughters of Green Mountain Gap. And I want to remind everybody, if you'd like to call in, you can do that. Call in number is area code 914-219-0868. Now my review of Daughters of Green Mountain Gap. The late 1800s were a difficult time to survive in America. The wilderness was home to many, and those who were fortunate to find themselves living in a small town or city still had to contend with a life of adversity and an abundant amount of uncertainty that surrounded them. Healthcare for many topped the list of what was needed to survive in a world of diseases like smallpox, measles, yellow fever, or more commonly, contracted illness like the flu, which ended up killing thousands. These illnesses could wipe out an entire village or town in a matter of days. Maggie McCory, a generational healer woman known as a granny woman, learned much of what she knows about the healing power of roots and herbs from a local Cherokee tribe, and she applies her knowledge to help her loved ones and the people who live around her. Her daughter, Carrie Ann, on the other hand, disagrees strongly with her mother and becomes a nurse and promotes the use of medicines for which her university training has taught her. Carrie Ann's animosity toward her mother grows as she teams up with a doctor in town in an attempt to bring sanity back to the community who didn't have much of a choice and to believe in the powers of mountain magic. Carrie Ann's daughter, Hosea May, must now find a way to investigate through the arguments that her mother and grandmother have and to forge her own future in the healing profession. Loving her mother and grandmother equally, she strives to learn from them both, but she doesn't know whether she wants to become a granny woman or a nurse. What will happen to these three women? Daughters of Green Mountain Gap touches on the family dynamics of three generations of women living in North Carolina at the turn of the century, but it also gives us a look at racism, fear of change, and the loss of traditions during time when our country was growing amidst all of that adversity. Terry Brown is a master at her craft of telling a compelling and gripping story. Her characters come alive on the page, imploring us to care about them, and I do, so much so that it's hard to leave them. This story teaches us as well as entertains. We learn what it must have been like at another time in our history when people had to rely on traditions and surrounding nature to heal a loved one, and we learned that despite all of their efforts, even with the use of medicines, people still suffered and died. Terry M. Brown has found her niche in her third novel. There's another keeper on the bookshelf with the rest. I love Daughters of Green Mountain Gap. And now it is, again, my pleasure to welcome back Terry Brown to the Writer's Lounge broadcast as an author. And we'll open up the door this time, and she won't be coming in as a co-host. She'll be coming in as an author. So we'll kind of act like we don't really know her. So, Terry, come on over here and tell us about yourself, and how are you doing today?
I'm fine. It's hard to pretend I don't know you, Tom. I've known you too long now.
Yeah, we always like to have a little bit of fun here, don't we? And, okay, so as I was saying, for those listeners who are just learning about you as an author and wanting to know more about your books, tell us about yourself. How and why did you start this journey of being a writer and now an accomplished author?
So, yeah, I have wanted to be a writer for a long time. As a little girl, I said I wanted to be a writer, but that got lost in the shuffle. You know, when it was time to go off to college, my parents had no interest in me, doing a writing degree of any kind. They were the ones paying. And then I got married and I had children and life just kind of like took over. Unfortunately, I ended up in an emotionally abusive relationship. And while in that relationship, I was writing for small businesses, but there was no way I could write for, you know, my fiction ideas that I had in my head because I didn't have a safe space. And you know from your writing that, you know, when you're writing your fiction, there's a lot of you that's going into that book. And if someone doesn't like it, you need a safe place to be able to sit down and say, wow, that was really hard. And I didn't have that. So there was no way that I was going to be able to write. But I got out of that relationship in 2017. And immediately, words like just started falling out of my mouth, and I began writing. My first manuscripts were really not that good, but they taught me a lot of things. You know, just the first one, really what it taught me was is I had enough words in me that I could write a novel. And so I wrote a few different manuscripts, but I was really terrified to show them to anyone. I met my now husband, which is like a whole story in and of itself, and I was never getting married again, so how we met and everything is just crazy. But we got married, and then we did this huge adventure where we rode across the United States from the coast of Oregon to Washington, D.C. on a tandem bicycle, so a two-seater bicycle, and that was 3,102 miles. And when I was done with that trip, like literally you could see the end. We stopped at a memorial with a flag, and I could see the flag in the distance. And I thought, I just rode across the United States. I can do anything I put my mind to. It's a matter of what do I want to do? And I decided I wanted to be an author. And 14 months later, my novel, Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, came out.
And then came?
And then came An Enemy Like Me a year later.
And then
and
came?
Now 1 year later is Daughters of Green Mountain Gap. And so, yeah, I'm on novel number three now.
It's kind of like having kids, isn't it, Terry? You just kind of you get into a new relationship. Everything is sunny and warm and nice. And your anxieties and all of that kind of disappeared. And that old relationship went away. And then everything becomes brand new, and we can focus on what we love to do. That's one of the things that I struggle with a lot myself. I've been through quite a bit of adversity in my life, and then recently I've had all these weird kind of health issues come up in my life. So it's hard for me to get engaged in a story that I'm writing when I'm in that kind of a mood, and it's really difficult.
You have to be in a good place.
Yes, and I know that you had the adversity in what you're going through with your husband now. Has some health issues that
yes,
you're struggling
does.
With, and I often wonder how that is for you to get through those times, because it must be hard too to separate that from your writing.
It is. And what's really interesting is, so Daughters of Green Mountain Gap is kind of a medical story. And I was going through this medical journey with my husband. So he, for those that don't know, he has brain cancer. And it's just been a very tough road. There have been a lot of things that are just really tough. And I think some of what I've been feeling and dealing with kind of came out in that book. Even though they're not the same, and I don't bring up, you know, there isn't any brain cancer and there isn't any, you know, it isn't modern or anything. I think a lot of the feelings about medicine and death and dying and life and, you know, what does all of that mean kind of came out in the book. So for me, if I can get my mind straight enough to write, I think it's often cathartic. And it allows me to, like, explore things that I'm feeling and get them out onto paper. So.
Right. Yeah, that's great for you. A lot of authors, Terry, stick to a genre, and sometimes can't pronounce that word. But historical fiction would probably be your niche. I know that I love reading it, and I've written a little bit of it myself. But are there any real differences between the three books you've written? And is there a similar thread that runs through all of them?
So, yeah, I think they're all very different when you look at it. Sunflowers Beneath the Snow is set in Ukraine. They call it historical fiction, but it actually starts in the 1970s, which I don't know how you feel about that, but it hurts my soul a little bit to think that, you know, 1970 back is considered historical fiction. So it's kind of a, you know, more of a modern historical fiction. And then An Enemy Like Me is a World War II genre. And then Daughters of Green Mountain Gap is 1890s. And someone pointed out to me not too long ago that this was the first one that I've done that didn't have a war involved. I didn't bring up any kind of war. So even in Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, we see the Soviet Union and, you know, the takeover of Ukraine and all of that part. And then, you know, of course, World War II. And then this one, there is no war. But what's similar about them, I think, is although I'm writing historical fiction, I don't think of myself really as a historical fiction author. I think of myself as a character-driven fiction author, and I have characters who they have stories to tell, and I put them in the setting that makes the most sense for the story that they have. In fact, I'm currently working on a book that is contemporary fiction, and it's very different than anything I've done before, but it's exactly what this character needed. And her name is Peg, and she has been talking to me for some time now. So I finally decided that I'd write that story. So I think the thing that holds all of my stories together is, you know, if you like a good character, if you want to feel like you've made a friend, if you want to get inside those characters' heads, then you'll like the books that I write, because that's what I try to do.
And I have read all three of them, and I've loved every one of them. And one thing that you didn't touch on, I was hoping you would. I was kind of trying to steer you in that direction, but you didn't mention it. But I think you would agree that every one of your books has to do with generational
characters. Oh, yeah, that is true. I love generational stories. And the reason I love to write them is if you are looking at any given topic and you have three generations, then you have three very different points of view. And even though they're standing and looking at the very same thing, there's three unique points of view because their lives have been different just because of the amount of time that they've lived and what they've lived through. So, I love the idea of the generational story. Plus, you get to throw in a lot of the family drama that happens, because I don't know about you, but I don't know any family that doesn't have some kind of drama where there are people that don't get along as well. You know, there's always the crazy aunt or the crazy uncle or the person who can't get along at Christmas or whatever it is. And I love to be able to bring those.
That's great. That's great. And I think generational, it kind of reminds everybody that, you know, even though we're separated by, you know, some 100 years or so from our great-great-grandparents, there's still some of them in us. In, well, it could be where you live. I mean, where you live is where they live. And I don't think people sit down and take the time to really think through all of that, because
right.
one little choice, one little decision that was made by somebody that lived over 100 years ago impacted who you are right now and where you live and how you were brought up, and just about everything in your life surrounds that one decision that a person that lived over 100 years ago made.
Right, someone that you never met.
Yeah, I think it's so fascinating to think about. And it's good to keep holding on to our past and loving history myself. I find it very, it's very important to keep the people in our past, whether it's a fictional character we can write about that we can relate to, or keep a historic era of our past alive, because it does impact us now, and it's very important for us to remember what happened in the past. But
the other thing I think is when you recognize that although these stories are in the past, a lot of the issues that these people are facing are very similar to the issues that we face today. Because, you know, the book kind of touches on racism, and it touches on family issues, and it touches on, you know, like tradition versus like the modern world. We face all of that every day. This isn't something that only happened in the 1890s. It happens now as well.
Right. And how did the seed begin with Daughters of the Green Mountain Gap begin with you? I'm always intrigued in how a writer comes up with something to write about. I'm working on that now. I'm, you know, in the process of trying to come up with a story that I can write next. And I'm always intrigued by how that happened. So how did it happen with you
story? It's a crazy story. I mean, it is really, like, it makes no sense at all how this came about. But it all started because I had a wart on my finger. And I know it sounds crazy, right? But I went to, I had gone to my doctor, not for the wart, but just for a regular checkup. And while I was there, I said, hey, any way you can get this wart off my thumb? And she said, oh, no, we would have to send you to a specialist. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. So I just headed over to the local pharmacy and got a patch. And that was the end of it, right? But I was talking to my brother a couple of weeks after that and kind of complaining to him about, you know, primary care doctors don't do anything anymore. It used to be that they did so many things in the office, and now they pretty much take your temperature and your blood pressure, and if you have anything wrong, they send you off to a specialist. And so I told him about my wart, and he said to me, why didn't you have someone talk it off? And I said, what? And he said, yeah, why don't you have someone talk off your wart? I've got a friend who can do that.
Huh?
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking, was what are you talking about? Then I figured that he was just pulling my chain, because I'm that person in the family that I'm really gullible, and people will tell me things, and I'll fall for it. And then for Christmas after Christmas, you hear the stories. You remember that time that Terry fell for whatever? So I didn't even really engage him in the conversation, but when we got off the phone, I couldn't help myself. I had to look it up, right? I had to know if he was pulling my leg. So I typed into Google, talk off wart. Do you know there are people who can talk to your wart and it will fall off within a week?
Oh, my goodness.
And then as I started looking at that, I found out there were people who could get rid of thrush if it's in your mouth by blowing in your mouth. And there were people who could talk to babies who were breech and get them to flip just by like chanting and talking. And that led me into the women who did healing in the mountains of North Carolina, which were called granny women. And the more I read, Maggie was born almost instantaneously while I was doing that research. And it was like I just kept going down more and more rabbit holes. And Maggie started talking to me, and it was like, oh, my gosh, that's where the story started. And then I had to figure out what I was going to do with it. But I knew as soon as I read all that information, it was like, I've got to have a character who does this.
Right. And I know you love research, so
I
here you are down the rabbit hole. And then, you know, how far along down the rabbit hole, how many weeks or months were you researching before you put the pen to the page?
Well, you know, it's normally what I do is I do a little bit of research, and then I write, and then I do some more research, and then I do some rewrites. But with my husband ill, I didn't have quite the same ability. So I had started doing some research on this book, or doing the research, and then my husband got sick. And at the point that he got sick, I didn't write for 4 months. I wrote nothing. I couldn't have written anything if I had to. My brain was just complete mush. I was too focused, not too focused. I was exactly as focused as I needed to be on what was going on with him and his health. And there was no writing. But then I started to write, and it took me, I don't know, off and on for like 6 months I wrote this book, which was very different than my others that I got done in like 2 weeks, where my first draft is done in 2 weeks. I did a lot of research beforehand, and then it sat, and then I wrote, and then I would research and write and do research and write and do research. I often research in the middle because I'll come up with an idea of something I think I want to have happen. But then I need some good, solid research to make sure that that idea is going to work. Is that really something that I can do or not? And if not, when I'm researching, I often find my answer. So if the answer is no, you can't do that, something else will have come up, and it will be like, yeah, but you could do it this way because of the research that I did. So, yeah.
Let's talk
about
character.
And you know, because we've talked about it before, I'm a pantser. So I don't have an outline beforehand. So a lot of times I'll have to kind of stop and say, okay, this is where I think I'd like this story to go. But given that it's 1890s in the North Carolina mountains, can that happen?
Let's talk about characters. So Maggie and her daughter have a very difficult relationship where they disagree on so much. When you create your characters, do you ever wonder how your readers will respond to them, and what do you think makes for an interesting character?
Yeah, I often wonder. In fact, with Carrie Ann, she's the daughter, and she's kind of a difficult character. She's a little bit hard to like. My editor kind of jumped on me a little bit and said that I had made her too hard. And I had to go back and soften her up so that the Carrie Ann that you saw is actually a softer version of Carrie Ann. So you can only imagine what I had done in the beginning. I think what makes an interesting character, number one, is that they're real, that they have real passions and that they have real problems, real issues. They're not perfect. You know, even the good guys, even the ones that you want to love and root for, there are times where you want to shake them and say, what is your problem? Can't you see? You know, and I think that's what makes a character interesting, at least for me. I love to read about a character that I can feel that they're real, that they could actually exist in my world. You know, because I'm not perfect. I make all kinds of mistakes. I'm constantly doing things that are self-sabotage, and I want my characters to have that same problem where they can't just do it right. They have to, you know, outthink themselves sometimes and you know, go down 13 wrong paths before they finally find the right one. So I think that's what it is. I always do worry what people are going to think of characters. But on the other hand, I try not to worry too much because I figure, you know, I write the best that I can, and some people will like it and some people won't, and that's okay too. So.
Yeah, and Carrie Ann is very three-dimensional, I think, and she is a very rough, difficult person to deal with. And,
right.
Whoop, hold on a second. You still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, my screen went black. Okay, I'm back. I guess I needed to move the mouse.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Okay. Super. There was just a little bit of a scare that we had here. Just my computer went to sleep. So anyway, yes, the character was very difficult. And did you take it from any personal experience in your life? I mean, do you have, I hate to ask it, do you have difficult children that from or?
So, you know, not specifically, but I've had difficult issues with different children at different times, and I've had difficult issues with my mom, and I have watched other people have difficult issues. And so I think Carrie Ann isn't any one person. She is just kind of a conglomerate of, like, when I thought about the fact that I wanted her to really not like the way her mother was doing healing, and she was going to go do it her own way. You know, she was so insistent on doing it her own way that she would never even consider anything that her mother did. And I thought, mm-hmm. Do I know anyone that ever says those kinds of things? And the answer is yes. And so I just kind of took all of that from the many different sources and said, okay, in this situation, how would someone like that respond?
Yeah, it was very compelling.
It's funny, someone asked me, like, who is my favorite character? And I don't know who my favorite is, but I almost in some ways say that it's Carrie Ann, because I feel like she needs the love more than anybody. Like,
right.
She's the one that needs, you know what I mean? She's the one that really needs someone to love her. So I'll do that for her.
Yeah. I kept wanting to turn the page to find out if she was ever going to get it. And, every time I turned the page, I found out, no, she's not quite there yet. It kept me going. That part of it really intrigued me. I was really excited to learn about Carrie Ann, what would happen with her. But so anyways, after writing three books in a short amount of time, we should add, and having a successful start as an award-winning author, I forgot to mention that too, what has surprised you the most about this journey, and is there anything that has disappointed you?
Oh, I think what has surprised me, oh, everything has surprised me. I was the most unprepared debut author that you have ever met. I knew nothing. I just kind of, like, I don't know, it's like I fell into it accidentally. I mean, I meant to do it, but I didn't know what I was doing. I had no friends who were authors. I didn't have a group that I was with. I had not had anyone read my book other than my husband. I had done nothing. So there's been a lot of surprises. I think the thing that surprised me the most was how much marketing you have to do on your own. You know, I think mm-hmm. I had this feeling that, you know, you would get your book published and the publisher would just market your book and it would just, you know, pretty much sell itself. And that is not the way it is. And I think that's been the most surprising. In terms of disappointing, you know, maybe I'm a little bit of a Pollyanna, but I haven't been disappointed. I'm just thrilled. I'm thrilled every day. Every day something is exciting to me. I get a review that is wonderful, or I get an award, or I see my book out in public, or something happens. Or like the other day when a lady recognized me at the post office, and it was just like, you know, made my whole day, probably made my whole month. No, I don't even know that I've had any real disappointments. I've had a couple of things that I have found mildly irritating – you know, a couple of reviews and things that I think you just, you know,
like
one
the,
was.
Like the, yeah, the one-star
well,
reviews.
One was, well, yeah, but I had somebody give me a review that they were unhappy. This is over Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, but they were disappointed that I wasn't Ukrainian. And
oh.
I thought, well, you know, I can't do a whole lot about that. So sometimes I've been a little bit, you know, irritated, but in terms of like actually disappointed, I really haven't been yet. I am thrilled to be doing this now at this point in my life. I think this is exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Right. Very good. So given all that, what advice would you give new authors on marketing strategies and what has worked the best for you in that regard?
So marketing strategies, the advice that I would give is don't go buy a book that's 1,001 ways to market your book, because you cannot do 1,001 things or you will, well, you just can't do it. You can't do it. So you need to find the types of marketing that suit your personality. I'm outgoing. I love people. So the things that have worked the best for me are I love getting on podcasts and I love doing in-person events. So I go to the libraries and I any place around here that will let me come and talk about my book, I haul my books in and talk about it. I also go to a lot of book clubs, and it seems that the ladies really love it when an author will come to their book club, and it gives them really big status if they were the ones that invited me. So I've been invited to, oh, 3 or 4 dozen now, probably closer to 4 dozen book clubs in the area. And what's great about that is they read your book, and now that I have 3 books, they want to read the others once they've read the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the things that work really well for me. Something interesting that I'm trying right now that I've not tried before is Facebook ads. And there is a local author that I was talking to, and this is something that he does, and he feels that it works really well for him. He swears that by spending $1 a day, I will see a huge difference. And I figured, okay, I'm going to give it 3 months at $1 a day. That's less than $100, and I'll see if it works for me. And so I'm trying out Facebook ads. So I think that would be the other thing that I would say is find a few things you feel really good about and get started doing those. And once you have that kind of on autopilot, start looking around and saying, what are some other authors that I know that are doing things? What could I do like what they're doing? And then talk to them. Because mm-hmm. I don't know too many authors who aren't willing to tell you what they're doing. He sat down with me at a coffee shop and in 45 minutes I had an ad up in 45 minutes. Now, I had done some homework. He had asked me to do a few things before I went in. But in that 45 minutes, he walked me through all the steps, and now I understand how to put Facebook ads up. And I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own. I tried it. I looked. I didn't understand 90% of what I was reading. They asked all these questions, and I didn't know where to go or what to do or what answer I was supposed to give for these questions. And so, you know, find someone that you think is doing a pretty good job at whatever it is you'd like to try next and say, hey, are you willing to help me out here? And most authors are more than willing to sit down with you. It cost me a cup of coffee. It was so worth it. It was the best 45 minutes I have ever spent.
Right. And I also have to mention that in regards to your strategies as far as going on podcasts, and certainly this one that you're also a co-host with me on.
Right.
But I've noticed the numbers of the episodes, the listen numbers, when I come down to the other two the other two broadcasts that you did with us, your listen numbers are skyrocketing up into the hundreds. So whatever you're doing is above and beyond everyone else that's ever been on this show. So I would
part of what I do though. Yeah. See, part of what I do, I don't know, like today before coming on today, I put it out on all my social media that I was going to be here chatting with you. And then I will put this on my Facebook, I mean, on my website. And mm-hmm. then, in a couple of weeks, I'll probably put out there again, hey, if you missed it, here was me talking with Tom on the Writer's Lounge. And then the other thing that I do is I'll go in and take little clips from this and create little 30-second videos with, you know, Terry answers a question about, you know, whatever, and I'll just do a little clip, and then I'll throw that on my social media. So I'm a firm believer in, like, don't reinvent the wheel. If you've been on a podcast, take that podcast, cut it up into little chunks, and then start using it in your social media.
Right. It's so important to be able to get, work with it and do what you can and put the effort into it. It's like everything else. You have to work
right.
at it to get those book sales. And, you can't count on just one podcast either to launch your career. It's too much pressure on me and you.
Yeah.
You've got to
get out there. You have to be willing
right.
to put yourself out there. And for me, being on a podcast as a guest is an awesome opportunity because you're reaching an audience that you wouldn't reach in another way. You know, the likelihood is that the listeners who are going to hear this podcast probably do not live close enough to me that they are going to see me in a live event. So this is a way that I can reach people that I might not reach in a different venue. So
exactly. And I see this as it's a tool for writers to use that will
absolutely.
Help them. It's not for us to promote them, but it's for them to promote themselves by using the tool that we're offering the authors on this program. So anyways, how important is cover design to you, and how and who do you seek out for help with that?
Yeah, cover design is really important. I had done a little survey where I was looking, I guess it was with An Enemy Like Me, and on NetGalley, they actually will tell you there's five things that they look at: the book cover, the book blurb, the author, whether it was recommended to them, and then there was one other I can't remember. And the thing that is the biggest draw always is the cover. And then the next biggest draw is what's on the back, what that book blurb that you have on the back. And that those two things matter even more than who the author is, especially if you are an unknown author. Now, that may not be true if you're a James Patterson, but for those of us who are, you know, at the level where I am, having a good cover and a good blurb on the back are absolutely critical. And in terms of how I come up with my covers, I have Atmosphere Press. They provide a graphic designer, and he talks with me beforehand. He gets me to show him covers of other books that appeal to me, and then why. So I might show him a cover and say, I really like this one because I like the way that the title is kind of ingrained in. And I like this one because of the color palette. And I like this one because of the realism. And I like, you know, and so you can go through and kind of show him the kinds of things that you like. And then if I have any ideas at all about what I'd like the cover to be, I go ahead and tell him those. And then they come up with three different cover designs, and from there I can kind of say, okay, I like this, but I don't like this part, and I like this, and I don't like this part. So with Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, I got three covers. I explained what I liked and didn't like with those three covers, and I got three new covers based on those recommendations, and one of those was the cover that I chose.
Right. Very good. Very good. So I know you've done quite a few book signings. You talked a little bit about it and done your readings. And how has it gone for you? And do you think it's something that first-time authors should do and why. Some of us don't and some of us do. How important is that, do you think?
I think it depends a lot on how comfortable you are. If you're going to stand up in front of a group and not be able to answer questions and not look people in the eye and not feel good, it's probably better not to do that. On the other hand, if you can stand up in front of people and answer questions, then I think it's an excellent opportunity. I have found that the people who sign up for my newsletter who have been at one of my events open my newsletter and click on my links. Those people who sign up for my newsletter and have never met me often don't open it and eventually cancel the newsletter. And I don't think it has anything to do with the newsletter content. It has to do with they don't know me. Those people who've met me, now they're my audience.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I met a lady in the post office the other day who recognized me. And I didn't recognize her because I met her in a group of 35 people, so I didn't know her, but she knew who I was.
Yes.
And
it's funny because the same thing happened to me yesterday in the store. I ran into this lady, and she recognized me in my hometown, and she had this glossy-eyed look to her. When she was looking at me, she says, "Oh, I got your books." And she's smiling, and she's, "I love your history books of Nedro," and she's looking at me like, again, making me feel like I'm some, you know, movie star or something, you know?
I know. Isn't it fun, though? I love that. I had a neighbor do that to me. One of the first things that happened right after I wrote Sunflowers Beneath the Snow, and she had been to my house several times. My husband had helped fix her bicycle. And she came to my door and she said, "I understand that you're an author." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Do you have any of your books?" And I said, "I sure do." And she said, "Would you sign one for me?" And it was like, "Well, of course, Marie, come on in." And I signed it. And she held it up to her chest and she said, "I've never had a book signed by an author before." And it was like, Marie.
yeah.
You know, and it is fascinating. And it's fun to think that, you know, because I wrote a book that somehow has elevated my status to people, you know, want to know me. And it's kind of fun. So.
And like you said, that one person with the glassy-eyed look, the woman in the store yesterday, and the same thing with you, it keeps us going for months.
It does.
Just that one person.
You figure this woman did this 2 years ago. I'm still talking about it.
yes.
So,
anyway, Terry, we got a couple more minutes left here. Just real quick here. How many books do you read in a year?
So last year I read 41 books. And this year I have already read 11.
Oh, wow.
I probably will read a little more this year than last year, but maybe not. I might end up in a writing phase in which I don't read much. So, yeah, I tend to, like Goodreads always has their little, you know, how many books are you going to read this year? And I put down 40. And I usually beat it, but I don't like to give a goal like that I know that I might really have trouble making, because I hate not making goals. So.
right.
So I usually read 40 plus is what I think.
Right. So anyway, as you know, here comes the question that everybody gets. This is your Oscar moment, another one. This is your third time up here. Any parting words about Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, and is there anyone you would specifically like to thank for the success of that book and anything else that you've accomplished in life?
Well, I definitely want to thank my husband. I dedicated the book to him. Despite all of his medical struggles and all that he's going through, he is really and truly my biggest supporter. He tells me all the time that I'm, you know, the next great American author, and, you know, he believes so completely in me. So definitely want to thank him. And then, you know, the people at Atmosphere Press for helping me, and, you know, all the, you and other podcast hosts who've had me on to let me, you know, talk about my book. And in terms of the book itself, I just hope that people will, you know, sit down and read it and, you know, let me know what you think. I'd love to hear what you think of the book.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And how can our listeners contact you?
Best way is to go to my website, which is my name, terrymbrown.com. That's Terry with one R. While on the website, you can go to all of my social media icons. They're all across the top. You could sign up for my newsletter. I send out a newsletter twice a month. Once a month, it's about me and my writing stuff, and once a month, it's about the different books that I've read. So I have, you know, little book reviews on the books that I've been reading. And I also have a contact page, and you can just reach out and ask me a question.
Mm-hmm. And you've also got Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, like I said, social media. If you go to my website, all my social media is up there. So you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, whatever they call it now. I'm pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Terry. Well, I'm going to ask you to stick around and put your other hat on now, your co-host hat. And, again, we're moving into our next segment of the show, which is the final chapter. And, of course, you know, final thoughts and intro to our next show. Once again, if you want to pick up Terry's book, it's Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, and you can find that just about anywhere these days just by doing a search for it, and then also search for Terry, too. As she just mentioned, you can find her out there, too. So any parting words, Terry, on the show today? And what I didn't
no, I'm just
ask
looking
you
for,
is,
I'm looking forward to our next author. That's great.
Right. And what is next for you? I forgot to ask. Do you have a title yet?
Oh, no title. I was so bad at titles. I probably won't have a title until it's written and partway edited. But it's a modern, contemporary humor, and it is about a woman going through menopause.
Oh.
A whole different, yeah, and I told people I may be committing author suicide, but the story idea came to me because there was a book called Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, by Judy Blume, that I read as a preteen, and it kind of follows Margaret as she's going through adolescence. And one day I had this thought, I wonder whatever happened to Margaret. And the answer was, she now goes by the name of Peg, and she's going through menopause, and the book was born.
Oh, great. Sort of a skip out of the genre, and good luck with you on that. Really looking forward to it. And I want to remind everybody, in 2 weeks, February 19th, 2024, Michael Kennedy will be here with his book, Time Conjurer. This is a mix of time-traveling science fiction and historical fiction. It takes us back to the civil rights era. So here we go, Terry, back to another historical fiction time in our past here. It should be fun to do that. So anyway,
Absolutely. Until
then, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and have a good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, you make.